but assertively, are not the creatures that you call orcs, and we refer to as Fotor. We may resemble them in looks, but we fight them as fiercely as you in Girdlegard once had to do. Your army's approach can be read as a threat, Flager, Issica said to him. She had gone very pale, and her black hair emphasized this. We have heard from the lookouts that you bring at least 80,000 soldiers. 100,000, Your Majesty. We will never threaten you. We are merely afraid that your own forces are not sufficient in number to retrieve the diamond from the hands of the Unslayables. And we are afraid also because you tolerate the broker in your land. He indicated Rajaelin. We have heard that you put them to the sword in the Outer Lands, Ortka exclaimed excitedly. Don't try the same thing here. He pointed to Lotionen and Durgard. We have powerful wise men that your warriors cannot win against. Magic, does that mean anything to you? Flager, Rodario's skill and experience told him, was enjoying playing a simple mind. Many here were treating him as if he were as backwards as an orc. Magic? No, not me. He shook his head, then pointed to the Ubariu in violet-hued clothing next to him. He will know. He is our top rune master, and he can do things that always astonish me. His companions laughed softly. We must settle what is to happen about the diamond. Sunderland told you how important it is for our land and for yours. For this reason, I insist we receive the stone after the removal of the Alpha. So, there is a threat, Issica exclaimed smugly. Your intentions are clear. Flager twisted his lips into a smile. Tungdil had faced a multitude of creatures in his time, yet he had never seen any looking quite so dangerous. No, I give you my word that my soldiers and I will march out of Girdlegard without attacking a single one of your people. A whisper ran through the assembly. They had heard the announcement, but did not believe it. Circa raised her voice. But what we will do is leave our own land, Von Galla, and we shall no longer guard the secret pass into Girdlegard as our people have done for so long. The lines in Gandagar's brow were deep channels rather than furrows. Nonsense! There is no secret way through the mountains. Then he hesitated, wondering the same thing as all the other rulers there. How did you get through the ravine and past the two dwarf fortresses? He demanded, his voice unsteady. I swear by Vrakus I shall attack you myself if... Flager turned to Circa. You tell them. We led the Ubariu into Girdlegard, she admitted. We have known about the path for a long time, and have protected it from the Fotor, who happened upon it by a grave mischance. We circumvented the Forthling stronghold while the Akronta besieged your gates, creating a diversion. And this is the path that will be used by the most ghastly of beings to invade your land, Flager predicted. You can prevent it, if you give us the diamond. With it, we can awaken the artifact to life that will close up the Black Abyss. It's a trick, Rajaelin insisted. Those were the words Tungdil had been waiting for. He pounced upon the elf deceit. A trick? If you speak of trickery, princess. How do you explain to these crowned heads the murder of Lutosil 4 cycles ago and the farce you stage here? Rajaelin stared at him. For the space of a moment there was nothing elegant or wonderful about her. Then she recovered and replaced her mask of sheer beauty. What nonsense are you spouting, Tungdil Goldhand? Is this how you repay my people's hospitality? You would tell lies about us? The elves behind their leader conferred nervously. Her bodyguard pierced Tungdil with sharp looks, unable to take further action in the circumstances. It is true. I have witnesses, your majesties, he persisted, fending off her attempts to ridicule his evidence. I need to tell you all something I had wanted to keep secret until the end of my days. The Eoil that Rodario and I destroyed in Parista was in reality an elf. Lusacil told me everything. The Eoil are the oldest and most powerful of the elves, and none of the elf folk would dare take up arms against one. This was the reason elves would not help us in our struggle. And he reported what had really happened on top of the tower. Rodario, aware this was not his big moment, let Tungdil speak, then swore an oath on his own life as to the truth of each word. Lutasil knew. Now that the Eoil followers have murdered him, it is impossible for me to remain silent. Rodario gave the signal for Ireheart and Circa to go and fetch Estalin. Ortga turned to the elf woman seated as still as a porcelain figurine, fists clenched in her lap. Say it isn't true, what Tungdil Goldhand is telling us. Wait to hear the witness you tried to have killed, said Tungdil, as the elf entered with Goda and Ireheart. Estalin's eyes were full of hatred and contempt for Rejalin. Again Tungdil was struck by the resemblance. I stand here, your majesties, and take my oath before the goddess Sutalia that I heard her speak of Lutasil's murder with my own ears. She arranged it. She prepared the ground for treachery. As he spoke, he indicated the princess with a graceful but accusatory gesture. My sister and her followers are desperate to further the teachings of the Eoil who cause so much destruction and suffering here in Girdlegard and in the Outer Lands. Do not allow her, whatever happens, to gain possession of the diamond, or your fate and that of your subjects will be terrible. Siblings! This explained why Tungdil had been struck by the similarity. It also made Rejalin's attempt on the elves' life all the more dreadful a crime. Estalin reported of his experiences in Alandor, about the new temples where the Eoil was worshipped, about the white stones that stood for purity and that were to be erected in each of the kingdoms. He told them about the plans to bring death to those who had, in distress and crisis, gone along with the evil, like the people of Taboribor. He spoke of how the elves would take over in Girdlegard, dictating to the citizens and allowing them no voice of their own, as soon as they had the diamond in their hands. The assembled monarchs listened in horrified silence. The Aetar considered themselves the purest of the pure, and as purity's champions, as almost of the same status as the Eoil. They want authority over all these lands, to be moral protectors. But they are no better than vicious, blinded creatures, killing so many in their own ranks that all opposition was eradicated. Estalin swiveled round. His voice was unsteady now, choked with emotion. And nobody saw, not even I, her own brother. Now you all know. I beg you in the name of the dead of Alandor, executed by Aetar. Prevent this! Stop them! He took a step back and met his sister's gaze. Rejalin swallowed hard. His appearance here had thrown her. Shocked silence reigned. Outside, soldiers' voices could be heard and the normal sounds of the town. The clink of harness, the noise of hammers and tools, the footsteps of citizens going about their daily business. By all the good gods, whispered Issachar, laying her hand on Rejalin's white one. Say something! You must answer these accusations! Revolted by the touch, the elf woman haughtily pulled away her hand and wiped it on her cloak. What is there to say? She said contemptuously. It is true. We want to give Girdlegard the purity and morality it deserves. The Eoil left us with this mission, and we rejoice in fulfilling her wishes. She watched the faces that surrounded her. It will not be long now, and our time will come. Then the wheat will be sorted from the chaff, The new seed grain will grow more gloriously than anything that has been seen before. Now it is out in the open, I appeal to you all. Submit to our test and show that you are all free of guilt. By Palendial! Queen Wei sprang forward. How you have deceived me! You won my trust with falsehoods and empty promises in order to spy out my land! She pointed an accusing finger. Do you think that this confession will bring you a single supporter amongst these monarchs? We knew you would react like this as soon as our good intentions to bring enlightenment and purity to Girdlegard became known. You cannot understand, Queen Wei. Regalian smiled forgivingly. You are not yet ready. But Weyand's sovereign was too deeply wounded to be calmed by such words. Do you dare to speak to me as if you were my mother? She cried indignantly. But that is what we are. We are the mothers calling Girdlegard to order for the good of all, the elf princess attempted to explain. She stood up as if to go. As so often with mothers, their actions are not understood by their disobedient children. Not until many cycles have passed and the seed of new Girdlegard has sprouted and grown will our efforts be acknowledged. Then shall we, the Aetar, and the wise teachings of the Eol be recognized and praised. Gandagar pushed in front of her, growling angrily. Where are you off to, Regalian? Face up to your responsibility. You have killed dwarves and humans. She looked at him in surprise. We have eradicated beings that were not pure enough to exist in the new order. They were the chaff. Her bodyguards fanned out into a protective line to shield her. And why the firstlings? What have those dwarfs done to hurt you? You poor, pitiful High King, with no idea what is happening in your own empire, she said. It was a thirdling colony. Dwarf haters. My spies were watching them and decided to act before they could carry out more evil deeds against you and any dwarves worthy of life. She smiled. Only a few of you will remain, I fear. You have many dwarf haters in your ranks. You do not understand. She is madder than I am, murmured Ironheart. We must not let her escape, scholar. She will destroy Girdlegard instead of vanquishing the Unslayables and their bastard freaks. Regalian did not listen, but strode off toward the entrance. The human monarchs were too confused by the revelations regarding the elf princess to know what to do. But Gandagar did not move aside. He laid his hand on his cudgel. You will stay here and answer for your deeds, he demanded in a determined voice. Estherlin came to his side. It is over, sister. I have warned Girdlegard about your evil plans and intrigues. You can never prevail in open warfare. And now, Highness? Malin moved over from the side. You have brought death to too many, including Alvaro, whose fears I was foolish to disregard. He was wiser than I. If you had believed him, you would have died too. She surveyed him from head to toe. As it seems, you are all united with this unpleasant person from the outer lands against me. I have no choice but to open your eyes. You surely do not intend to wage war? Ortka could not take this in, any more than Issachar could. I beg you! The elf woman stared. It is not your place to beg anything of me, young man. Whoever gets the diamond first will decide what happens in Girdlegard. She gave a sharp nod. One of her bodyguards drew his sword as quick as lightning and made to thrust it into Estherlin's body. But Gandagar had not missed a thing. His cudgel flew out to deflect the blade. The elf, however, followed through and struck the king in the chest as he tried to protect Estherlin. The elves and Regalian hurried out of the assembly. Suddenly, one of her guards turned round with a rapid arm movement and something whirred toward Estherlin. Ironheart grabbed up a small stool and hurled it to intercept the knife that had been thrown. It fell harmlessly in the corner. In the meantime, the princess made her escape. "Let her go," said Malin, seeing Goda setting out after her. "You would stand no chance against them." He rushed out, and they heard him giving hasty orders. Horses whinnied, and riders cantered off. The prince returned to the assembly. "My men will cut them off and hold them." He turned to Flagor. "We may be needing your warriors sooner than we thought, but not to attack the creatures of Teon." Issachar stood up. "I know when I have made a mistake," she admitted with humility. Recent events had changed her mind. "I would ask the dwarf people and Tungdil Goldhand to forgive me. The elves' skill in deception is too perfect. Without you, this unthinkable plan would never have come to light. For this, my heartfelt thanks." She looked at all the kings and queens. "I do not exaggerate when I say that once again, we are indebted to the dwarfs." Tungdil was supporting Gandagar, who for some reason was having trouble staying on his feet. Ironheart helped him. "Gandagar, what's wrong? Did the sword get you in the ribs?" He checked the armor. There was a scratch and a slight dent. "That's what I call good dwarf armor," said Boindil proudly. Gandagar's eyes rolled back in his head. He tried to speak, but his knees gave way, and his arms hung limply by his sides. "Quick! Put him on the table!" instructed Lotionen. "Let me see to him." They picked the High King up and stretched him out on the conference table. The dwarves took off his breastplate, and the Magus inspected where the impact had been. "Nothing," he said. "No fractures." He touched a red mark underneath the ribs. "This area here is very vulnerable. It is possible to render someone unconscious with a single blow with one's hand. It is possible that the blade had a similar effect through the armor." Tungdil saw a dark red spot appear on Gandagar's neck. "Blood!" he exclaimed, touching the dwarf's throat. At that moment he stopped breathing. Tungdil's hands explored the thick beard until he found the wound. Directly under the chin his fingers came across a sharp piece of metal. The broken sword blade had bounced up and pierced his skin there. He parted the king's jaws, fearing the worst. "He's dying!" shouted Ironheart in horror, looking to Lotionen. And when the Magus began a spell, Tungdil stopped him. "It is over," he said darkly, and showed them Gandagar's mouth where the sword fragment had pierced right up into his skull. The High King's brain was irrevocably destroyed. "By Vrakus," whispered a horrified Ironheart. He hung his head. Goda was doing likewise. Tungdil shut the dead man's mouth and closed his eyes. "Put his armor back on," he ordered. "High King Gandagar Silverbeard of the clan of the Silverbeards of Goimdil's Fourthlings is on his way to the Eternal Smithy, back into the hands of Vrakus, his creator. Take his body to the Brown Range, where he shall find a resting place, surrounded by his own clan and the majestic mountain peaks. The elves have slain the High King of the Dwarves." Malin looked at Estelin. "This will not end well." "Not the elves. It was the Aetar," said Tungdil, looking at the blood on his fingers. The death of his monarch suddenly made everything much worse. "It will be hard to explain that difference to the tribes making their way here, and the dwarves already at Taboribor," predicted Ironheart. "Both have pointy ears." He looked over at Estelin. "Saving your presence." A soldier entered. He stared open-mouthed at the body of the High King. "Prince Malin! The elf princess and her escort have escaped. They have vanished into thin air. Her soldiers have gone off to the caves." "When was that?" "Just after the beginning of the meeting. We thought they were following your orders. Malin uttered a curse. But Jalen guessed she would be unmasked. Lot Ionan raised his arms. Terrible though the death of Gendigar is, we have no time to mourn. The elves will try to find the unslayables and snatch the diamond. He glanced at Tungdil. Go and tell the dwarves what has happened. Anger makes a dwarf invincible. Speed is of the essence. Vital if we are to survive. Then to Malin. Send all your warriors into the caves and follow the dwarves. Guard all the entrances. Not a single elf must escape. Finally he turned to Flegor. It is your task to defend the caves from without. We are expecting a huge army of Aetar. Flegor nodded. It will be an honor. We are experienced in stopping the broker and destroying them. Should it be necessary? He changed into a different language, and his companions withdrew. Shall we have the stone, Lot Ionan? He asked. Yes, spoke the Magus without hesitating. It has already caused enough trouble in Girdlegard. Take it, and put it where at least it may do some good. Flegor gave a sketchy bow and left. Ireheart, Goda, Sirka, and Tungdil took their leave and hurried out to inform the rest of the dwarves about the death of their High King. Tungdil felt a dull ache inside. He sensed this was not a good omen. When they reached the camp, the banners were already at half-mast. The news had spread quickly, and the anger of the warrior dwarves, men and women alike, gathering around to hear him confirm the rumour, was palpable. The commanders of the Freelings stood somewhat apart. Tungdil stepped onto an upended bucket, brandishing keen fire in the air. High King Gendigar is dead! A furious dwarf pushed forward. Murdered! He screamed. By the pointy ears! There were shouts from all sides as indignation at the cowardly murder spread. Listen to me, called Tungdil, as loud as he was able to be heard over the noise of the throng. The elves are not guilty of the king's death. Our foes are the Aetar. You must not make the mistake of treating them and the elves alike. The angry hubbub dwindled away, and Tungdil was able to report what had happened in the tent. Then he pointed keen fire at the caves of Toboribor. The Aetar want to take over our homeland. Let us now fulfill the task Vrakas gave us. Stop them, for the sake of Girdlegard! No one spoke. A dwarf in the first row went down on one knee, removed his helmet, and leaned on the upright shaft of his warhammer. His lips moved silently. Warriors to the left and right followed his example. In a wave of clinking armor and clattering helmets, the dwarves all knelt on the flattened grass. Only the dwarves of the free towns remained standing. What are they doing? Asked Sirka, surveying the sea of bowed bare heads. Are they calling you their new leader? Or are they praying? No, they are not praying, answered Tungdil, all too conscious of what was happening. He could read their lips. It is an oath of vengeance. Chapter 14. Girdlegard, Kingdom of Goregar, the Black Saddle, late summer, 6241st solar cycle. Limassar stood contemplating the blackened remains of the Table Mountain from whence the Eoil and her army of light had issued. They had set the Dark Mountain on fire to show their power to the peoples of Girdlegard. Even non-combustible elements had been transformed into sheets of bright flame. The elf touched the rock reverently and scratched off some of the sooty deposit. Underneath, the stone was a startling white. The Eoil had driven out the evil and replaced it with purity. Only such pristine stone was fitted for the new holy shrines and palaces. A wonderful place to rest, said Itamara next to him. She was a member of the warrior division he was taking to Toboribor on the orders of their princess. It's amazing that no one else has discovered the beauty to be found here.
But how could they?
Limasar, the leader of the troop, looked at the elf woman.
They think the place is cursed, whereas, of course, nowhere is purer. It has been purified, cleansed right down to the depths of the earth.
He raised his arms.
Can you imagine the magnificent palace we shall build for the Eoil and Regalin?
Yes, Limasar, said Itamara, visibly moved. It is the center of a pure... She broke off, swayed, and looked down at the crossbow bolt protruding from her breastbone. Limasar quickly ducked behind a rock.
To arms!
He shouted to his warrior elves 100 paces away, camped under an overhang. Even creatures such as they, who preferred sunshine to night, needed to take shelter from the sun's scorching noontime rays. Itamara wrenched the arrow out of her chest as if it had been a mere splinter, but blood spurted out onto the stone, trickling down.
Where was that?
And only then did the elf woman collapse. Limasar, scanning against the light, could hardly see his troops. He had led them from the red range of mountains in the southeast of Girdlegard. Finally, he was able to make them out as they jumped to their feet. At the same moment, about 50 small creatures with huge, two-handed quarrying hammers appeared on top of the rock they were sheltering under.
Dwarves!
Limasar pressed himself against the rock.
Look out overhead!
The warning came too late. Above, where the rock was vulnerable, dwarves had been hammering away to split the stone. Limasar could hear the grinding sound as it gave way. The enormous overhang crashed down in one piece, burying the company of warriors. Weighing many tons, the gigantic boulder crushed elves and horses like grapes in a winepress. Just 70 of his 400 soldiers survived the attack. They crawled out of the debris. Others were pinned down and screaming for help. The air was filled with the sound of arrows as crossbow bolts showered down on them, bringing swift death to 30 more. With fearful roars, the dwarves leaped down off the cliff and launched themselves without mercy on the wounded and helpless elves, taking no notice of pleas for help or gestures of surrender. Hammers that had made the rock face collapse were now smashing slender bones. More and more dwarves appeared, the new arrivals carrying axes, cudgels, and shields. The remnants of Limasar's unit were hopelessly outnumbered.
Accursed dwarves! Limasar yelled. May Sitalia strike them all!
He heard footsteps, and a shadow flew past. Suddenly a red-headed, brawny dwarf with a bright beard was menacing him.
What coward is crawling around here in the dirt?
The dwarf laughed grimly.
Stand up, pointy ears! I am Gingsgar Unforce of the Clan of the Nailsmiths, from Borengar's Firstlings.
He was wielding a two-headed hatchet and holding a shield.
You shall follow those you have led to ruin!
Limasar stood up and drew his sword.
How do you dare to attack us? Your trickery has been exposed, all of you, you and your princess. You killed our High King. Despicable treachery.
He made a great sweeping blow, but the elf dodged the axe.
We know your plans, Eoil. Ha! We destroyed her, and we'll do the same to you.
Limasar stabbed at the dwarf, catching his shield.
You? The dwarves think they will destroy us? Ha 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 ha!
He laughed at him.
Not today, not tomorrow, and not when the world comes to an end.
Gingsgar hacked at his opponent's right flank and, when the elf parried the blow, hit him on the head with the edge of his shield. The blow met bone and sent Limasar lurching into a block of stone.
You are wrong, as you see.
He rammed the flat side of the shield onto the fist in which the elf held his sword. Putting his weight behind it, he broke the fingers of the elf's hand. The weapon fell to the ground. Limasar yelled and drew a dagger with his other hand. You cannot prevail against purity! Kingsguard struck the elf with his hatchet before he could be harmed by the dagger. The axe blade laid open the armor and the chest beneath it. The elf collapsed. Bring me a hammer, called Kingsguard, setting his foot against the elf's shoulder and wrenching his axe blade out of the elf's flesh. Don't die yet, pointy ears, he laughed. My hammer wants to smash your arrogant face. It's been waiting so long. Five dwarfs ran up with the weapon Kingsguard wanted. On their clothing could be seen the blood of countless elves. The head of the hammer was red and sticky and had fine hairs clinging to it. Tell me your name, Kingsguard demanded of Limasar, who shook his head weakly in protest. No? Then keep it to yourself and tell your false gods when you meet them. He lifted the hammer and dropped it vertically onto the skull of the wounded elf. The bones stood no chance against the strength of the blow. The skull burst open and blood streamed out through nostrils, ears and mouth before the head was crushed beyond recognition. That's Fagandogar, he cried, and spat on the mutilated corpse. He shouldered his hammer and went over to where the overhang had collapsed. Pools of blood had formed on the rock, life juices trickling out from underneath the huge slab of stone and from the bodies of those slain by arrow or club. A fine sight! Kingsguard laughed roughly, and the others joined in. It was a good idea paying the elves a visit and paying our respects to Gandagar, wasn't it? Good thing you saw them coming, agreed Balandal Lighthammer of the Clan of the Hammerheads, wiping blood off his face with a bit of rag. The two were alike, but his beard was brown, whereas Kingsguard's was red. They would be taken for brothers, were they not, from different clans. Kingsguard climbed onto the nearest rock to have a better view. He and his clan's 500 warriors were the contingent from the Red Mountains, sent as reinforcements for the Taboribor siege. The news of Gandagar's death had reached them as they marched. Dwarf spirit had flared up in fury, and his soldiers were of one angry mind. Seeing the numbers of elf dead did not cool his blood. He was eaten up by the thought that there were still elves alive. What are these few paltry corpses? Alandur is full of them, he murmured belligerently. Balandal looked up. I agree. When it's over, someone will find a way of explaining away what the pointy ears have done, and they won't get the punishment they deserve. Kingsguard looked at his friend. Hear me, children of the smith, he called. The dwarves thronged in front of him, not a trace of regret showing on any face. Our High King has been taken from us, and we know who perpetrated his treacherous murder. They tell us the elves were dazzled and led astray by the avatars and the elf woman that led them. He raised his hammer and pointed north. Remember the wars our folk have waged against the elves over thousands of cycles. We never sought such wars, but were forced into them by the aggression of the elves, their cruel deeds or malicious threats. Even the Alfar are more honest than they are. I say the elves never wanted peace with our people. The slaying of Gandagar shows their true colors. We try to negotiate reconciliation. May Vrakas be our witness that we tried. And this is how they repay us. He struck the rock a mighty blow with his hammer. Enough! Let us make for Alandur and tear the deceiving evil heart out of the elf folk before another malevolent fruit ripens on the trees of their glades. And the dwarves roared approval in a frenzy of victory and bloodlust. They put aside the task they had been given. Long live Kingsguard! Shouted Balandal, brandishing his morning star. Let him lead us to Alandur, and if our kind track down the diamond, we shall make sure no pointy ears are alive to grab it. He headed the march. To Alandur! Vengeance for Gandagar! Kingsguard was hoisted up and carried on a shield. "Vracus is with us," he promised his dwarf following. "Death to all elves!" Above the heads of the warrior throng, he held his shield up with one hand and raised his warhammer in the other. To see the impressive figure of a red-bearded dwarf was immediately to recognize the new High King of the Dwarves, one who would preside over bitter and terrible times. Girdlegard, Kingdom of Eiderslain, the Caves of Toboribor, late summer, 6241st solar cycle. Ironheart took a peek round the corner. The passageway, as yet unexplored, lay dark and abandoned before them. Or rather, it gave the impression of being abandoned.
"What happens if we meet elves, scholar?"
he said before jumping round, his crow's beak raised.
"Depends how they behave. If they attack, we fight back," Tungdel answered. "But I don't want to see any of us lift a weapon first," he warned his companions.
He was leading one of the dwarf bands that in the last 10 orbits had penetrated deep into the former orc territory. As well as Ironheart, Goda, and Circa, he had 50 heavily armored experienced warriors who had already shown their mettle in battles on the Black Saddle and against the Avatars and Orcs in the Grey Range. Resolute veterans all, they feared no peril and would fight Teon himself if need be. Lot Ionan could not be with them. Instead, they had Dergard to counter the magic of the Unslayables, or perhaps of the Elves. The dwarves were taking over all the fighting. Ironheart poked at a long, thin object with the tip of his boot.
"Orc bones. Not very old, but not very recent."
He bent and picked up his find.
"A snout faces thigh bone. Severed with one blow."
It was a clean cut.
"Must have been an extremely sharp blade," he said, admiration in his voice. "Not a sword, and certainly not the kind of axe the orcs use."
"The Ubariu?" suggested Goda, hesitantly. "Did they get in here secretly?"
"No."
Tungdel moved forward cautiously, his right hand clasping Keenfire.
"The Unslayables. They killed the orcs."
Boindil shook his head doubtfully.
"Do you think they'd simply do away with the last of their allies for the hell of it?"
"No, not just for the hell of it, but they'd do it. Perhaps they'd carried out their task and weren't needed any more."
From in front of them came a loud hiss, and two large green spots glowed in the darkness. There was a rumbling sound, as a terrifying creature made of Teonium picked up a metal foot and moved toward them.
"That must be the thing King Ortgar was describing,"
Ironheart called out, raising his crow's beak.
"Anybody remember where the weak spot is for this particular freak?"
"No, don't look for a weak spot," Tungdil ordered.
If Fergus was really the mastermind behind these monsters, there wouldn't be any weak spots.
"Let's get it another way."
Dergard pushed to the front, lifted his hands and started to intone a spell, but Tungdil stopped him.
"Keep your magic for when we face the Unslayables," he said. "Don't forget that some of the parts are coated with an alloy that conducts magic."
"You are right."
Dergard lowered his arms.
"It would help rather than harm them."
His gaze wandered upwards toward the roof.
"But they presumably would be vulnerable to a rockfall."
"Save the idea for emergencies. We'll try something else."
He indicated to the dwarves who were carrying their climbing gear, "Take the ropes, tie its legs together, and trip it up." The oversized suit of armor was pushing closer, rattling and hissing. The massive hands opened and closed with loud clicks, as if it could not wait to grab hold of the dwarves. In the meantime, they had glimpsed the monster's face behind the thick porthole at breast height. It was inwardly raging, the noise of the machinery drowning out its shouts.
"Can we get near enough before it realizes what we're up to?"
one of the warriors wondered.
Tungdil gave a dark laugh.
We'll bring it to you. Get ready. Yes, that's what I like, laughed Boindil, and gave the crow's beak a trial swing. Let's knock. Maybe the thing inside will just open up and ask us in. Provoke it and get it to chase us. But be careful. We don't know if Ortgas told us everything it can do, warned Tungdil. Take it in turns. I'll go first, demanded Ireheart, and rushed off with half the dwarves after him. The others watched tensely as the first feigned attacks were made. The creature was astonishingly flexible for its huge dimensions, fatally flexible. One overbold attacker lost his life. An iron-clad foot kicked him through the air, and he collided with the wall of the tunnel, breaking his neck. Over the creature's breast area, openings became visible. Then the monster bent forward and sent a hail of missiles shooting at the dwarves. All of them missed. Ireheart was doing well. Although the fire of battle was raging in his veins and he was slamming away at the boots and joints of the monster, he was staying alert enough to keep walking backwards, luring the living suit of armor after him. Our turn now, called Tungdil, raising keen fire. It was time to find out what they could achieve. Would the alloy coating protect it? Circa bent and kissed Tungdil wordlessly, then smiled at him. Just in case one of us doesn't make it out of the caves alive, she said, whirling her staff. Shall we? He nodded and stormed ahead. Those few words of Circa's echoed round his head and threatened to distract him from the task at hand. He pulled himself together and ducked to avoid the grasp of the machine's snapping fingers, feeling the draft as the blow narrowly missed. He attacked with keenfire. To his inordinate relief, the axe head flamed into life, gathering power to strike the foe. The blade hit home above the iron ankle. Lightning flashes blazed, and the runes on the armor shone dark green. A jerk went through the machine, and a new noise erupted inside like the twanging of a breaking bowstring. It's still alive, scholar, Ireheart screamed from behind. The thing in the glass case, it's still there, and I think it's laughing. Furious now, Tungdil drew back his weapon. There was dark green blood, nearly black, sticking to it. At least Keenfire was able to injure it. Then he saw the elf runes on the monster's right breast. The word he read was Death's. Take care, Circa warned, but it was a second too late. The flat iron hand hit him and catapulted him away. He lost his helmet and his belt came loose, tangling itself round his boots. Caught upside down, like a bound guggle, he could see the monster stomping toward him. Sharp iron nails underneath its boots with fragments of bone and armor from previous encounters hung between them. Come here, and I'll slit your tin can open, he taunted the colossus, raising his axe. Then Circa was there, dragging him along by his belt. Their giant adversary followed them and stepped into the trap. Hardly had Tungdil and Circa passed than the rope was tautened and the ends fastened round a rock. It caught the monster's iron foot. Its pace slackened. The rope burst apart, but the beast had lost its balance. It managed to bring its arms forward to break the fall and to prevent it falling onto its porthole. Now! Bellowed Ireheart, sprinting off and using his momentum to swing the crow's beak upwards with tremendous force. The blunt end hit the thick porthole in front of the monster's face. Clunk! Four cracks appeared in the curved pane of glass. The three iron balls of Goda's Nightstar completed the destruction. Shards fell down on her and Ireheart. Circa had freed Tungdil from his involuntary bondage. Everything all right? Or have I dragged the skin off your bones? No. You have stolen my heart. This time, he was the one who planted a kiss.
Then he sprang up to help Boindil, looking on in fury as the machine struggled up.
"Stay where you are, infernal bucket!" raged Ironheart, whacking the iron arms in an attempt to break them, in spite of being underneath. "You have killed your last dwarf!" He struck an elbow joint.
The combination of the creature's massive weight and this well-aimed blow caused the material to yield. One of the holding bolts snapped, and the forearm broke off. The machine toppled and could not right itself.
"You're mad! Get out from under there!" called Tungdil.
But Ironheart was too far gone in his battle lust to hear.
"I'll smash your ugly nose and the rest of you to boot,"
he promised the beast, thumping his crow's beak into its face. Blood sprayed out, and the deformed features disappeared in a sea of black. The whole machine shuddered, as if sharing the pain the creature within was suffering.
"Ha! Now it's..."
The left arm gave way, and the three-pace-long torso fell with a thud. Its fate was sealed. Tungdil saw his friend disappear under the massive black armor. His cry of horror was drowned out by the terrible clanking and rattling, a noise that eclipsed any other sound in the tunnels. He did not dare look down to check for blood.
"We'll have to hoist it up to..." "That was close,"
they heard Boindil laugh. His helmet appeared on top of the armored monster. Then he was up and standing on it, swinging his crow's beak.
"Ha! That's what Vrakas likes to see," he called happily. "Now the unslayables have lost two of their beasts."
He stamped on the creature's metal back.
"It wasn't actually the Magister's weak point they told us about, but it wasn't bad, was it?"
Tungdil gestured him to come down. "Get off there before the altitude gets to your brain and you attempt more stupid suicidal stuff." He hid his relief behind the seemingly harsh words.
"Coming, scholar!"
Ironheart stroked his weapon.
"Crowsbeak and I are in just the mood to take on another of these monsters."
He looked down between his feet.
"There's something like a lock here. Shall we break it open? It'll take us to the cogwheel innards for sure."
With a high-pitched shriek, steam gushed out of a vent next to Ironheart.
"No! Let's get on!"
Tungdil did not like the sound at all. His own people's steam machines had valves to release a build-up of pressure. He did not know if this contraption had the same.
"If the boiler blows, I don't want to be next to it." "Gotcha!"
He stepped over the iron hip, walked down the leg, and jumped off the foot, brown eyes gleaming with a mixture of war rage and triumphant delight. A dangerous combination of light-headed boldness and unshakable self-confidence.
"Do you know what? We'll have another of these down before the day is out."
"You are incorrigible," said Tungdil, and left it at that.
"Come on." "Of course I'm incorrigible, but hesitation never gets you anywhere."
He winked at Goda, who was gazing at him admiringly. She was proud he was her trainer, and had completely forgotten the argument they had had in the barn. Together they walked along the passage until they reached a fork. Tungdil mentally arranged the elf runes in the most likely order. "Your deaths have." Two more creatures were needed, and they would have the riddle solved.
"And now?"
Durgard wiped the sweat from his brow. He was the one least able to cope with the sultry heat, and these Taborobor caves were extremely hot, affected by the steaming, simmering pools they found everywhere they went. The dwarves were not enjoying it much either. It smelt too strongly of orc. Tungdil indicated a passageway where cooler air was emerging.
"That one."
He took the lead. With every stride they took, it got colder. Damp settled on their chain mail, and the chilliness, welcome at first, soon had Durgard shivering.
"It's like a crypt,"
He spoke his thoughts out loud.
I don't like it here.
Who do you think is enjoying this? Retorted Ironheart. Just because I am a child of the smith doesn't mean I feel happy in this pigsty. Caves aren't all the same, you know, Magus.
Tongdo had reached a cavern and realized that Durgard had not been far off the truth with his suggestion.
Quiet!
He hissed back over his shoulder. A vague feeling of unease warned him against entering, but there was no choice. The diamond could be anywhere.
Come on, but quietly.
This cave was a good 50 paces long and broad, and the walls curved above them in a dome at least 40 paces high. Exactly in the middle, a dark stalactite hung down. It was the length of 2 grown human men and the girth of an ancient tree. The stalactite's tip pointed down to a woman, with long black hair lying on an altar of basalt, her hands folded on her stomach and her eyes closed. Her black silk robes, draped to the right and left of the bier, partially obscured the Alfar rune ornaments on the stone. Under her crossed hands lay 2 long, slender swords that Tungdil recognized at once. The unslayable siblings had used similar weapons to attack the Eoil in the battle on the tower. A bluish light was emanating from the diamond on her breast. From time to time a silver flicker illuminated the signs and the countenance of the recumbent figure. They had found the unslayable sister. And the stolen diamond. On the floor round about them lay the skeletons of orcs. The remains of 500 or more. The cut marks on the bones made no other interpretation possible. They had died by the same sharp blade.
By Samusin,
whispered Durgard in fascination, unable to take his eyes off the Alfar woman.
How exquisite she is!
Even lying there like this, still and stiff, she had more grace, more elegance, more beauty than the elf princess Regalin. Tungdil and the other dwarves could not endure the sight of her features. It was like asking them to look into a dazzling reflection of a bar of gold, or to go right up to a glowing furnace. They could have done none of these. At last, even Durgard had to lower his eyes. But the fascination had not left him. Blind to any danger, he approached the altar, lifting his trembling hands in his desire to touch the dark goddess. The brittle orc bones scrunched and crumbled under his feet.
Leave the creating spirit alone.
A voice as clear as a mountain spring sounded suddenly on all sides.
She has been tired for so very long.
Durgard stood stock still and looked to the right and left without seeing a soul.
I don't want to hurt her,
he called in ecstatic tones.
Only to be near her, to kneel and gaze upon her.
Can the pointy ears have deprived our Magus of his senses, scholar?
Asked Boindil in dismay. How Tungdil wished he had translated the runes in the inscriptions on the doors of the throne room in Jon Balsur. Perhaps it would have helped here. But he did not speak the Alfar tongue.
I fear so, he replied under his breath.
Shall we drag him away? Suggested Goda.
No, stick together, and do nothing to provoke Durgard.
He was afraid the Magus would use magic to defend himself. Durgard moved 2 paces closer to the altar. He lifted his gaze. The diamond illuminated the immaculate features, the sight of which burned itself into his brain. The Magus was sobbing like a small child. He sank to his knees and crawled over toward the unslayable one through the mass of orc bones, unaffected by this ghastly detritus.
Do not approach the creating spirit! The voice whipped him back. But I must,
begged the awestruck Durgard, frightened at the thought of withdrawing. They heard cogwheels clicking into action, the clanking of iron, the rattling of a drive mechanism, and then a hissing sound. Out of a dark corner of the cavern swept a white cloud of vapour that wandered around randomly. Tungdil thought of the mist demons that had taken over Nudine.
"I shall not let you disturb her," said the elfish voice with a terrifying hiss.
The next in the series of machines made by the sick genius Fergus now approached, its many wheels turning the orc remains to dust. Tungdil saw a mixture of vehicle and heavily armored beast. Below the hip it disappeared into a box-like construction on wheels. The elf rune he was looking for was on the front plating.
Faces!
It had lifted the visor, and yellow eyes watched Durgard from above.
Get out of here! If it weren't so viciously dangerous, you'd have to give Fergus a medal for inventiveness, whispered Ironheart.
His words were picked up. The machine lifted its head suddenly and looked toward the cave entrance.
You have come to disturb the creating spirit.
An armored hand shot up to slam the visor down.
I cannot permit that.
The vehicle picked up speed and came toward the dwarves through the sea of bones.
Spread out!
Tungdil had seen the machine's long Tionium assault spikes, and the sharp wheels that would slice any victim lying on the ground. The trick with the rope was not going to work with this one. Spotting that the dwarves were splitting into two groups, the machine operated a mechanism that let down two long blades right and left. Ironheart grinned.
Not all the constructions are perfect. Those blades are set too high. We can easily...
With a loud clicking noise, the blades were lowered down to mid-dwarf height.
I should have kept my mouth shut.
Ironheart was furious. Then the monster machine started after them. Before long, it had struck one brave warrior on the hip. The combination of the vehicle's speed and the blade's sharpness was enough to cut through chainmail and bone. Screaming and spurting blood, he collapsed onto the orc remains while the chase went on. Three more dwarves were cut to pieces. The rest of the group swerved out of reach, pushing into a narrow cleft where the beast could not pass. Tungdil made use of the distraction. With some of the other dwarves and Ironheart, Serka and Goda, he ran through the cave, stopping at the altar on which the unslayable one lay. Their target was the diamond lying unguarded there.
Ironheart, you get the diamond,
Tungdil commanded.
I'm going to decapitate the Alpha woman. Why not the other way round? I'd like to cut her head off. Because only Keenfire can put an end to the life of an unslayable.
Goda looked over her shoulder.
It's seen us, and is coming this way.
She slowed her pace and was about to confront the machine.
No, keep going!
Ironheart grabbed her by the shoulder.
Behind the altar. It'll be safer there. Or it'll roll right over you.
Running headlong, he launched himself and leaped onto the Alpha. If he wasn't going to get to take her head off, at least he wanted to injure her. A beam of green light hit him on the groin. The magic hurled him backwards, and his crow's beak flew through the air, striking Serka on the forehead. She sank to the ground, unconscious. Goda whirled round to face the new attacker, but only found a very familiar face. Durgard was crouching by the altar with one hand raised.
You must not disturb her. Didn't you hear? He hissed. Don't you dare try again.
Ironheart clambered to his feet, cursing. Apart from pins and needles all over and a few grazes on his hands, he was all right.
You wait so long for a Magus, and when one finally arrives, he's nothing but trouble.
He looked to see how Serka was.
She's alive, scholar. You deal with the human.
But the machine rolled onwards like a demented fiery bull, lowering the spear in its hand. The blade edges shimmered in the diamond's bluish light. Chapter 15 Girdlegard, Kingdom of Idaslane, the Caves of Toboribor, late summer 6241st solar cycle. Tungdil confronted Durgard, thrusting Goda back.